We've been talking about institutionalisation, and this is a blog post I wrote about the same subject some time ago. Prisons and schools, in fact all institutions, require their inmates to adopt a certain set of behaviours. This was really apparent to me when I was in hospital for ankle surgery. When I arrived, there was only two other fellow patients, Harry and Bert, and they saw it as their duty to induct me into the ways of the ward. They told me about the routine, they told me about what to eat and what not to eat off the menu, and importantly, they told me about the staff and who with and how to engage with them. Other things, though, more subtly affected my change into a patient, and on the first day, I wandered around in my own clothes, chatting amiably, pretty much like a visitor. Later, I changed into pyjamas, and that was one significant change that really mattered, wearing night clothes during the day. The other thing that really marked me out of the patient was waking up attached to a syringe drive and an intravenous infusion. Anyone who looked at me knew certainly I was one of the patients and not a visitor. And it certainly deepened with Harry and Bert, their view that I was now one of them, all three of us being immobile. Other things that bonded us were our shared concern. In our microcosm, different things mattered. The quality of the food, visitors and doctor's rounds all sparked conversation and concern. And all of this was enhanced, and if you've ever been camping, you'll know what I mean, by the complete lack of privacy. Curtains are not soundproof. So, from what they heard, Harry and Bert knew to ask me about my pain. Harry and I knew that Bert was having difficulty going, if you know what I mean. Don't make me spell it out. After only 24 hours, my pain was pretty much well controlled and I was heartily tucking into the hospital meals. After 36 hours, the hospital meals were having their own effect and I, too, was having my own concerns about going. But I was absolutely determined that anything that was necessary in the toilet line could wait until I was mobile. I waited. By day three, there was a lurking presence that sooner or later had to be dealt with. Day four, the physiotherapist taught me to do non-weight-bearing walking with crutches, and there was only one place I was headed. Harry and Bert knew it. After 5 or 6 minutes, I came back. "How did you do, lad?" asked Harry anxiously, and I shook my head dejectedly, limping back to my bed. Bert was quiet, his own internal drama not yet resolved, and from the conversations we heard from behind his curtains, we knew that there was some pretty significant chemical intervention ongoing. I resolved to apply all my food and nutritional knowledge to the problem and gorged on grapes, porridge and hospital curry. The following day I tried again and with considerable effort joyfully exercised the beast from within. Bert wasn't so fortunate. His problem was starting to make him feel ill. He withdrew and really only joined in a few of our conversations, dozing fitfully on his bed for much of the time. Later that afternoon, from behind drawn curtains, we could hear snatches of doctors' conversations and we knew there was more happening. "Looks like we'll have to." "Yes, we'll give it to him tonight. Something was definitely afoot." That evening, the curtains were whisked around his bed and the startled squeak from Bert told us that some manner of treatment had been administered. The following morning, he remained subdued, feeling unwell. Harry and I chatted about the papers and hoped Bert would be okay, until shortly after lunch, when the drama came to a head. "Nurse!" shouted Bert. I reached for my nurse call button, thinking that there was some panic. So it seemed, did Harry, as two nurses, both ran to the wrong beds. Harry and I pointed in unison across the ward, and curtains were whisked around, and a wheeled throne brought to the bedside. Harry and I glanced at each other. No amount of padded upholstery could disguise the wheeled seat of ease that appeared. For 15 minutes, we listened to the groans and strains until finally, in response to Bert's call, a nurse slipped through the parted curtains. We waited silently and anxiously, but knew all was well when we heard a happy exclamation from the nurse. "Good grief, Bert, I think you've had a baby." For 2 hours, a thick, fecal fog hung over the ward, blurring our vision like a heat haze. But nobody minded. Well, that's me done for now. Catch you next time, everybody.